What are you afraid of? If you're anything like me, and I know I am, then fear is a major part of your life. I try to live my life in a way that flies in the face of my fears, free from any power they try to assert over me, but it isn't always so easy. In fact, it's often very, very difficult. I know, I'm a few weeks late for Halloween when this discussion would have been perfect, but there's still a chill in the air and the familiar foreboding of a moonlit winter sky framed by leafless, wiry branches that look like mangled hands reaching heavenward in a confused and terrified kind of agony. Too dark? Yeah, well, welcome to the episode. We're getting spooky up in this blanket fort. It's time for ghost stories, what we love most about scary movies, and what strikes true existential dread into our anxiety-addled adult brains. If my favorite horror flicks have taught me anything, it's that the buddy system is critical to ensure the best chances of survival. So my buddy, Whit Hertford, came by to courageously and safely explore our fears together. We talked a bit longer than usual, but I kept most of it in because it was good stuff and we were really on a roll. So I'm just going to get right to it. No further ado necessary. Here it comes, ready or not. From a dark and scary Blanket Fort recording studio in my haunted one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with the very devil himself, my soul brother from another mother, Whit Hertford, about fear.
No, I feel safe.
You feel safe?
Yeah.
We're like gonna tell ghost stories in this little tent.
No, I'm excited about it. I feel like this is gonna be real good.
I'm so scared. I'm really spooked.
Are you spooked right now?
Yeah, I'm gonna pull up. I'm gonna look up scary music.
Oh yeah, because it's all about fear.
Scary music.
Here we
go. Let's see if I can find. There's scary music videos. What do you think scary music videos are? Scary Halloween music. Creepy music mix part one. Just to get us. Oh. You guys hear that? Oh my god, what was that? So scary. You're driving in the car at night right now. And like, you look in the rearview mirror. And not quickly, but like really slowly, this guy just sits up in the back seat. Just a figure slowly sits up and says, "Keep driving. Don't turn around." I like the idea of making scary music. Can you imagine making an album with like lyrics and you're like, and it's this?
I mean, it's like you're blind. You're basically just plucking keys. I don't think there's like a lot of like rules to it.
Yeah, you can't be like too pretty. You have to.
Yeah.
That's weird that sounds, that we've determined that there's like a soundscape for scary stuff. That's, yeah, I don't know. Obviously, I'm talking about fear in like an esoteric, like fun way right now. Mm. And I figured we could start there with like scary movies.
Okay, cool.
You've been in some scary movies.
Oh boy.
You're
No, you're allowed. Go ahead.
You're a Freddy Krueger. What were you, Freddy Krueger's son?
His name's Jacob.
Jacob Krueger?
Yeah, I don't think they say his last name ever.
I mean, that's got to be his last name.
I'm sure on, like, legal forms, it's Jacob Krueger.
It's Jacob Krueger.
Not his, like, birth certificate.
Yeah.
I might be a junior, too. Maybe Freddy's real name is Jacob.
Yeah, and then they just called him. I mean, he, like, what, was call Jacob me? F. Krueger.
He's like, call me Fred.
Call me Fred. and then you were also Lil Baby Whit was in Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
Lil Baby Whit with Lil Chelsea Hertford too.
Yeah. Do you I've told you that story, right? When we shot it.
What happened? Remind me.
So we're supposed to be in this cave. There's this, the bad guy in that movie's name is Cain, as in like...
Scariest guy in the world.
Yeah, biblical figure, right?
But the guy, the actor who played him.
Yeah, he died right after.
What was that actor's name?
Satan? I don't know.
It's the scariest man in the world.
It's totally scary. Yeah. And like, for real, scared me half to death.
Yeah.
But like, we were trying to be good actor kids. And my dad took... It's like one of the only... set experiences that I remember my dad taking us to, and so we had to like be sobbing because we're abused and scared kids, and it's just like a montage. It's not.
It's like
you blink.
It's this scene where Cain's like with the
followers,
the fallen souls from heaven.
Yeah,
and
like
they're
his
all
cult.
In pain and anguish, and he's in this cave, and he's like preaching to, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's even a clip like on YouTube.
Yeah, we watched
of
it
that
one day.
Scene. We did?
Yeah, because you said you were in it, and I don't think I believed you. I don't know why I wouldn't believe you when you say you're in something, but then there you were.
And so I think my dad was stressed out that we weren't going to ace it, so he, like, walked up. I saw him talk to the director, and then he walked up to me and Chelsea, my sister, and he goes, "Hey, guys." And they're not rolling. And he goes, I just got a call from your mom, which, like, that's, like, hard to do because, like, they had pagers and stuff. You have to go find a payphone or something. Like, this is a long time ago. And he's like, "I just got a call from your mom and Androcles," which was our cat, just died.
Androcles.
And we started sobbing. And he looks at the director and he's like, points at him, like, "Roll it."
Oh,
and I was
my
like,
God.
Yo. And now I look back at that and I'm like, that's the most fucked up thing that's ever happened. Like, they literally, I mean, also kind of like so old schooly stage dad kind of deal. And, but I mean, you know, we're really, really crying up in that thing.
Yeah, you were. I remember watching it.
Because my cat died.
It's very sad. You're a little baby wit and you're like 5 years old or.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah. And you're so sad. It got to you and I went, "Oh my goodness, you're really crying."
Yeah, my cat died.
Because
Andrew, I mean, not really.
Not really, but Bruce Hartford said that he did.
Anyway.
Wild.
Wild. Yeah, that's a scary moment.
You like scary movies, right?
I mean, have you seen my face?
So like, I gotta say, I like that you dressed up for this. You came in and you were like, "I picked an outfit for the podcast."
Which I realized as soon as I did it, that it was like, "Hey, you don't understand how these work."
You thought that I was going to have a photographer here or that I was going to like...
That it mattered at all!
That I was going to live cast it.
It doesn't matter
something.
At all.
I think people are telling me that I should do video feed with it and stuff, but I think that probably is for when people are actually listening.
Yeah, you know, baby steps.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, baby
steps.
Take
it one step at a time. I don't need to be live streaming to...
You're like, "I'm two episodes in. I got this fucking podcasting down. Now let's make
it." Hey guys, download the app. You can watch me live stream. What? You have an app? Yeah, there's four people who have it. My mom, my third grade teacher, and Ben in Minnesota. Ben, shout out. What up, dude? Download the app. Scary movies, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that.
I do love
why
scary
I wanted
stuff.
To start there. I feel like
it's okay.
Obviously fear is we're gonna get into the more existential
cool.
aspect of fear.
Yeah.
But there's something about the different aspects of it to me where like we have a lot of fun with fear. You know, we went to Halloween Horror Nights the other night, and it
I
was
love it.
So much fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I used to be something happened. I don't know when, but like I always bring up the you know the part of why I like macabre stuff and. Spooky shit is because I'm a Scorpio, and I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think it's because I was exposed to like a lot of, you know, in my previous life being on film sets where like, you know, I saw scary shit and Freddy Krueger was my dad. Like, I kind of was desensitized to it, so I'm not as freaked out. But I was freaked out as a kid. It's just taken a long time for that to maybe, I don't know, like gestate. Because now I go to a haunted house and I laugh my ass off.
It's so funny, but you also want. To that thrill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, I was trying to think about fear stuff. Do you want me to, like, thoughts that I have, or do you have an order?
Well, where are you trying to start?
Just that when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's a good place to start.
Okay.
Yeah, what were you afraid of?
When I was a kid, I remember I had this loft bed, which is like a bunk bed with a desk underneath instead of another bed. And I remember routinely, like I had to have the light on in the hallway. I was really not cool with the dark. And I remember I would be sleeping on my bed, and routinely in my childhood home, I would see somebody at the end of the bed.
No.
And I remember many because I had a window that was right there.
Wait.
Are you
stand by? Keep going.
Right. So, and I was, I feel like I have to do the voice now too.
No, just tell me the story.
Yeah, it's, and I would wake up and I would see this shadowy figure and I would wave at it like, I see you, motherfucker. Like, that was always my move. It's like, I'm not scared of you because I see you.
Yeah, just, I don't care.
I see you. Or like, if my parents went out and I was babysitting my sisters and I was like scared, I'd be like, I would always say this. I'd be like, I got a gun. Like, just out into the nothing.
No big deal. Got the police on speed dial just in case anyone.
Hey, dude, I got a gun. And so I was scared of dark, you know, the dark. I was scared of the idea of somebody taking me. Like, I think as a kid, I always thought that I'd be kidnapped in a mall or something. I was very scared of that sort of thing. And I remember that one time, I was a little bit older, maybe like 11 or 12, and I heard some commotion downstairs, and I went downstairs, and
music intensifies,
and there was like a cop there and everything. Well, I kind of hid out in my room for a little bit, but what happened was somebody did try to break into our house through the sliding glass door.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And my mom woke up and called the police and all that shit.
That's why I stopped the music. I was like, wait, he might tell her.
Yeah. So we had like a real intruder. And I feel like really scary stuff in my life actually at some point has actually like manifest itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I have real touchstones to, you know, things that people are scared of. Death and like being alone and stuff like that, you know? So,
well, yeah, see, that's the interesting thing, is I think a lot of people can relate to definitely, you know, fear early in life, early. That it, we're those things, the shadow in the corner of the room.
Yeah.
I remember I used to sit on my bed and look at the doorknob of the bedroom because it was like a reflective round doorknob.
Okay.
And I would look until I fell asleep because I was watching to see if anyone was crawling on the floor. You couldn't see past the foot of my bed, but I could see on the doorknob to see if there was, you know, a demon or a bad guy crawling into my room to come get me. And I would be like, but then it's always like, well, what am I hoping to see here? And what am I going to do if I see it wave at him? Like,
right. I just remembered that I grew up in a suburb in Southern California, like kind of by Thousand Oaks. And I remember there was this lady, bringing up what we had already talked about, who, I mean, it could have been a story that was so concocted by kids and sort of like a legend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But she would walk around year round, and I saw her many times. She looked scary. She looked like a drug addict or whatever. Curly dark hair, kind of tall, really like scary as shit, and she wore a Freddy Krueger sweater and a hat.
No.
And a glove all the time. And would walk around all the time. And the only other thing that I've experienced that's like that, where I'm like, the fuck is that? Is in Salt Lake this last year, when there was that guy that was dressed head to toe in white with like a mask for no reason. Like
He was wrapped. He was like wrapped up.
Yeah, he was kind of like a mummy knight.
Yeah.
It was weird.
He was wrapped in like drapes and things like that.
And he would always walk by our apartment. Mm-hmm. I would always like be coming back from the grocery store, and
it wasn't clear what he was doing. It was very clear that it was some form of public performance, or that's just what he was doing.
I don't know.
But it wasn't clear whether or not you should be interested in him or afraid of him. Or,
yeah,
Yeah.
Or is he like another Elizabeth Smart guy? You know what I mean? That's what I always thought. I was like, was this Emmanuel Part 2?
Yeah.
Is that guy's name?
And we all just, I think his name is Brian David Mitchell, but yeah, he called himself. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, I think he did call himself Emmanuel. Yeah, it was some thing like that. What a nutbag.
So I don't get, I don't think I get, yeah, because when you're a kid.
But here's what I'm going to say. No, because yeah, as a kid, we all have that stuff, but there's an aspect of it, don't you think, that's kind of fun?
Yeah.
Like you, like it was sort of fun to walk around the house with your siblings or with your friends when they'd be over for a sleepover and your parents are out of town.
Yeah.
And you're like, we're going to, or I mean, not out of town, maybe they're just out to dinner and they're not home yet. And you hear a noise upstairs and you go to investigate it together.
Yeah.
And you grab a bat or a knife from the kitchen.
Totally.
And you're freaking out and it's like, what do we actually think is going to happen if we find someone? What do we think we're going to do? And are we, there's a part of us that's sort of hoping to have this encounter.
I kept a drumstick under my bed. That was my, like, that's not going to work because first of all, you have to be in such close proximity and swing really hard. And what am I going to do, poke them? Like, I don't know.
You could get an eye. You could really get, if you had good aim.
I'd have to, like, Mario jump to that eye.
I can think of some ways you could drumstick someone up pretty good.
Yeah, you know what it is? So I think the thing about it is, like, is that we still like being scared. We like going to haunted houses, I think.
We like going to scary movies.
Like going to scary movies. And I think the only reason is, well, maybe there's, like, an aesthetic thing for a lot of people. Like, that's for me. I like the aesthetic of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the emotional thing is that we just want to feel something. So whether it's intense love, intense whatever, and we're feeling fear, and fear is so intense, can be, that we just want to feel something. And that, for a lot of people, is like, they're going to feel the most when they're afraid. And so then I would imagine that most, I mean, I don't know, I'm pontificating, but like horror film fans probably have something traced back where like fear was really, really visceral for them.
Do you think that it has to do with the fact that fear is so hardwired to our evolutionary kind of programming that we like to, rather than just having the fear be this scary external force that's sort of constantly chasing us, we can sort of control it in a way with these narratives, with like, I go to a movie and fear becomes fun. It becomes this activity I do with my friends, and we're jolting and we're screaming and we're laughing.
Right.
I go to a haunted house and it's fun. Well, unless you're Mary Neville, not fun for her.
Hates it.
That was the funniest thing ever.
And that's the worst. We're the worst that we're like, hey, who hates this the most? Let's subject them to it.
Well, and she goes, they always see me and they know. And they know and they come for me. I'm like, yeah, but you can't be such an obvious target.
They're
gonna come and get you. But I did feel bad. She tried to warn me that she wasn't gonna like it, and I thought, oh, it, you know, I had no idea the level to which
it was. We always think like it'll be good for you,
like it'll be fun, you're gonna laugh, you're gonna, it wasn't funny.
And this will be the time when you like get through it and you'll be so brave and you'll be so happy. You'll be so proud of yourself. And I will have done this for you.
I really thought so. I really thought we would get through it and she'd go, I'm glad I came. And you know what? She has been telling everyone how fun it was.
Oh, good.
But that first 10 minutes, I thought, oh, I shouldn't have encouraged her to come. to come here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think what you were leading with and getting to, I think that's correct, that we... there's an element of like, I can control this.
Yeah, that it's fun now. My fear is my buddy. I'm having fun with it because it seems like it's something that, you know, as we head more into the existential layer of this, my fears are the root of, I think, a lot of my problems. When I act out, it's usually because I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
As part of my program of recovery from addiction, we do an inventory where we sort of go through our entire life and go through resentments and go through like things that we're hung up on through our entire life. And then we try to examine kind of root causes in all of them. And there's like several primary root causes or kind of root factors, you know, pride, ego, stuff like that. Fear almost always comes into the equation. There's always, almost always something I was afraid of, afraid of losing, afraid of not being recognized, afraid of not getting the recognition I thought I deserved, afraid of. Fear is such a driving cause of a lot of my maladies and things that I am vexed by.
Right.
I wonder if the element of having fun with fear, I don't know if there's something to that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and I think that's the thing, is that fear also is a thing that it's very individual. You experience it on your own. It's like, I don't think most people are only afraid in groups, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. very personalized and individual. And why that is difficult is because we don't like being alone.
Yeah.
Like we don't.
Mm-hmm.
That for me, that's, I mean, this is totally right, Austin, that like, I was thinking about that too. I mean, I walked in here today and said, I think I'm nervous, which is just code for scared.
Yeah.
You know?
As soon as you said that, I was like, yes, spooky. Spooky town.
Yeah, well.
We're gonna talk about things we're afraid of.
But it's so interesting that like, boogeymen, in my case, feeling like you're gonna get kidnapped at a mall, like.
But that's a fear of abandonment, fear of insecurity, fear of.
And that's the thing. That's what they're all rooted at. And my fears now as an adult, and have been for the past 15, 20 years.
Maybe not abandonment. That's an oversimplification. Sorry, but
no, you're right.
Yeah,
I have huge abandonment stuff that I never. It's not until 2 years ago that I looked straight in the eyeball and went, "Oh, you have abandonment stuff," which is then translated. I've unhealthily coped with abandonment by being codependent.
Do you think that the reason why? So. You put your finger on, I think, people don't like the feeling of being alone. People don't like the feeling of being unsafe. People mm-hmm. don't like the feeling of being exposed.
Or surprised, too, right? I don't know what's happening. I'm out of control.
Yeah, but okay. So right now, a trend that I'm noticing in scary movies, and maybe it's because I'm getting older, and maybe this does change as we get older, is a movie will come out. A good scary movie, a movie that's critically acclaimed as well as pleasing fans and stuff,
yeah.
where a lot of the response from the audience will be, well, that wasn't that scary.
You're right.
And what they mean is, I didn't really get jolted too many times in that movie. And that's there's a surprise scare that's that. I don't like, oops, the thing jumped out at me, the music swelled and the thing jumped out and yeah. I knew it was going to come and it still got me. But that's the fun part. We're trying to have fun. I don't think we like when a movie scares us in a way that is truly unsettling.
Yeah, that challenges us or makes us evaluate things. If The Exorcist came out this year,
mm-hmm.
no one would like it.
Yeah.
Because it's not the kind of scare that people are expecting.
I think a lot of people didn't like it then.
Well, they didn't like it because it did scare the shit out of them. And it made them vomit in the theaters or whatever the legends are.
It felt like, hey, wait a minute. This isn't fun. You're right. Talking. I'm scared that I'm going to have a demon when I go home because I watched this.
Like, and same with Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
Those movies, which hold up, but if they came out fresh new and were essentially the same movies, I don't think they would register.
Yeah.
Because we live in a world of expectation. We live in a world where we are always kind of operating 6 steps ahead of what we should. We don't live in the present and all this stuff that I talk about all the time. Like, we don't live in the present. We're always trying to be smarter than our experience, right? That's a thing with
That's literally everything I do on this show. Everything you just said is like, I'm thinking 6 steps ahead. I'm trying to sound smarter than I am.
You're very smart. No. So I think that's a really interesting idea. And again, like, I mean, I'm just guessing, but I think that, like, what are people scared of right now, right? Like, I know what I'm scared of. I'm scared of, you know, like, you sound like an old man, but, you know, I'm scared of climate change. I'm scared
those are big ones.
Yeah, I'm scared of like real life shit.
Calamity.
Yeah. Catastrophe.
You know,
debt. Money's fucking terrifying. Purpose is everybody's backpack. Everybody's like, do I matter? Do I matter? And I think a lot of people spend a lot of time and they don't. I didn't push pause for a long time. Again, not until like this past 2 years, which has felt like a spiritual renaissance, where that sounds kind of wanky, but it's, I mean, that's what it feels like.
No.
You watched it. You've like had a front row seat.
Yeah.
And I feel that I got to become less afraid because I was able to trace back, again, if there's codependency stuff, if there's abandonment stuff, if you face it, then you don't sort of just like tuck it under the bed, then you can get not only a little more brave, but you can have more purpose. You can start to have room for figuring out what you want to do, right? Because if there's other things that hold you back, people that have crazy depression, you know, I struggled with it for a long time, and I'd always be paralyzed by my fears.
Now, how about the fears of getting better from stuff like that? That's a thing that's come up for me lately is realizing, oh, I'm afraid of growth. I'm afraid of healing. So this year, spiritual renaissance, like you said, I feel like I've been going through my own personal spiritual renaissance. Yeah, and what I realize is there is a lot of fear around getting rid of my old habits and getting rid of my old buddy depression, my old buddy anxiety, my old buddy...
Because it defined you.
Yeah, my old buddy self-loathing, my old buddy self-hate.
Totally.
Inviting true self-acceptance and true self-love and true growth, very scary.
Super scary.
I don't know that place. I don't know her. you know, and yeah, very, very scary. Scary and... So, I mean, this goes... So, again, this is the realm of real fear. This is what scares me. And I was talking to someone the other night and they were talking about the movie The Shining because Dr. Sleep is coming out. And they were saying, oh, we're going to go watch that. And it was this guy and his wife was like, yeah, but I'm really, really scared. I've never seen it. And people talk about it like it's the scariest movie ever. And I was like, well, I don't think it's scary in the way that you might be prepping yourself for. Right. It's not, to me, I just said, I don't really think it's a scary movie. Like, you're not going to be able to sleep. I think it's a very good movie. And I said, to me, the scariest thing on display in the movie is the idea that a loving husband and father could deteriorate to a place where he is you know, figuratively and literally destroying his family and willfully destroying the things that matter most to him. That's the scariest thing to me, because I see that and I go, I don't think I'm ever going to chase my family members with an axe through a hedge maze. Let's cross our fingers. But I see that and I think the fact that he sort of loses himself in his work and isolates to a point where the people who matter most to him, he's completely destroying those relationships in real time and chasing them away. And they're trying so hard to get through to him and let him know, Jack, we love you. And he's slipping further and further away from accepting their love.
Yeah.
And accepting that it's okay to just show up for these relationships and accept love. That's what's scary to me. But that's not scary in a way where I think, I mean, there's ghosts and there's boogies. And
I think what you said, like with jolts, that's people's barometer is how often am I gonna jolt?
Yeah.
A movie like Hereditary, you're gonna jolt a little bit more, so it's successful.
But even that movie, a lot of people thought, we went and saw it with a guy who said that was so boring.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Remember that?
Well,
it didn't have enough jolts for people.
Well, this is my other theory too. My other theory is that we don't want to deal with anything. If you're talking about The Shining, I mean, not only is that really what's, I mean, that's definitely what the movie is about, is a man destroying himself and his family in various ways. But it does deal with mental health, right?
Right.
So, like, mental health is terrifying for people. It's very challenging for people. It might trigger them because they know somebody that deals with it. They themselves might deal with it or have not dealt with it yet. And so when we see movies, TV show, that doesn't give us a sense of, like, hope, it kind of leaves it a little bit more like, you know, the ending of something is a little bit more like, hey, this is how life is. Like when we went and saw Beautiful Boy, right? You know, like that's a challenging movie. And in some regards, probably for you, I mean, I'm talking for you, probably kind of scary. Probably a lot of fear in that movie.
There's a lot of relapse on display.
Totally.
In the movie, and that's what was scary to me.
And that's because we don't like feeling like we can be certain. I struggle with uncertainty all the time because I feel like I want to be in control. Again, this is where like trying to be present and not be six steps ahead is a thing I'm constantly working on. And that's why as a director, like I love that space because I totally get to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
Like it allows me to kind of flex that muscle.
You're still a very good collaborator when you do that though.
Oh, thanks.
But I think that's your method of being the guy in charge is...
That's just trial and error, man.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. just like me.
You found it works better.
Well, when I was a dictator, mm-hmm. you know, and some people might think that I still have that, but when I've operated in that mode, you can get something accomplished. And it might be kind of like good on the face value,
mm-hmm.
but if the people don't have a lovely, and it sounds corny, but like enriching experience where they can feel a little bit, they can have some growth, they can, you know, that's...
Feel like they did something important. Feel like they were part of something that's going to be kind of one for the books. You want that. You want that experience every time.
For sure.
You want the people you work with to remember what it was like to work with you every time. Sometimes we get a little bit better than others. But even so, in trial and error, you found out the collaboration works better.
Way better.
But the dictatorial impulse is also rooted in fear. There's a fear of trusting other people with your ideas and trusting other people to incorporate their skills and ideas into your vision.
Well, that's why I direct theater rather than trying to pursue directing film,
mm-hmm.
because and this might be a fault of my own,
yeah.
I don't necessarily know how it's possible to have 30 different auxiliary departments mm-hmm. and heads of those departments and hundreds of people, and the thing that you care so much about and that is the story you want to tell, how all those branches are going to work as one form. Like, that to me sounds
so
like you're fucked before you begin.
You and I function a lot the same way in our respective creative pursuits, where, yes, we do like making theater and we do like the collaboration of theater. We're very comfortable in the theater, but also we are very much so multi-hyphenate. Writer, director, actor, you know, and not because I necessarily don't trust other people to do it as well, but also there's a fear, there's an insecurity of asking other people to come and help me on my thing. There's a fear of I have a thing I'm trying to do, and you know what, I'll just do it because I don't want to burden anyone else with trying
exactly.
get what it is I'm after, and B, I don't want to risk it. I don't want to risk losing it but almost always when I choose to trust collaborators,
it works out.
It works out because they actually bring stuff to it that winds up broadening the original idea and not broadening in a bad way, but really like opening it up.
This is going to sound really grandstandy, mm-hmm. but it's like it's such a cool thing to get to that point, Austin, because mm-hmm. I share that. And I, you know, it's hard for me to not want to like share this information and lecture to somebody when I see them trying to choke the process to death by themselves, where they're trying to like really, I don't know. I feel that it's such a smoother journey and it's more of a straight shot when I get to have, you know, if I write a play and I direct it, and even on the you know, the few chances where I've acted in the thing too, that sounds like a total narcissistic holiday, but really it's because I want to keep the pipeline moving and I want the flow from inception of idea to production to feel very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the people that I like find a way to do that. The film directors and the theater directors that I like, you know.
You've had a lot of success doing that, too. And you make a good point. Film does function very much that way a lot of times.
Has to.
The best films, usually it's a writer-director.
It's
their baby that they brought. But there's so much collaboration that goes into the form.
And you have to earn that, too.
Yeah. But also we see, as people who have been on the other end of it too, just where we're the cog in someone else's machine, generally, if the vision's good, we're happy to be facilitators
for sure.
of it.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's nothing I like more than going, I don't know, leaving it up to somebody else, trusting that, and having them blow my mind and do way better than I could have ever if I had tried to manhandle it.
Right.
And so, but again, I think that's just, I don't think you're born with that. I think you have to go through your 10,000 hours to figure that out.
Yeah, that's a trial and error thing for sure. So I was going to get into, I mean, like, we've covered a lot of good stuff, but I was going to say, I guess ask you, have you ever found ghosts and monsters and vampires and Frankensteins and things like that particularly scary? Like, what in movies outside of, I guess the first question is, what's scarier to you, monsters or like serial killers? Like Michael Myers and Ghostface from Scream?
Yeah, definitely. Or,
yeah, that was me too. I definitely. And I think that there's something about, I need to be able to believe in it.
Yep.
But then there was something about movies like Poltergeist and The Exorcist where, like, growing up religious, I was like, I kind of do believe that if I'm not careful.
Sure.
You know, dark spirits from the netherworld will come and inhabit me.
Yeah.
I
mean, I've had now moments where, and not necessarily in religious aspects, but just in specific moments where I can feel some sort of dark presence. I feel that actually the more open I am to lots of options of how the world revolves and not being so myopic and religious.
Yeah.
Because that's how I was. That's how we were.
Mm-hmm.
And when, the more open that I am, the more susceptible I feel my antenna are to like a surprise thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit. Like that's, you know, I don't know. I mean, when you see... I had this one thing, I think I told you this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, me and my friend, we went to this bar, and this is the most recent thing that's, like, so paranormal, and I don't know how to explain it.
Do you keep hearing, do you hear that ding that keeps happening? There's, like, a message ding, like, ding!
Yeah, is it not your laptop?
It's not my laptop, because my Wi-Fi is off, is so that Mary's? That doesn't, it must be Mary's, that's and I'm like, right. Can you, I'm gonna... Guess we're breaking up.
That was it. That Why'd was you guys it? End? Kept my ding on.
I mean, listen to the episode with Whit. You'll understand. Listen to the episode. I mean, three dings is fine. Four, five. I like. It's like.
Get
can
it
you
together.
Get on board with my dreams here?
Get it together. No, yeah. Sorry. I was out drinking with a friend. We kind of stayed till it closed. So then we've gotten her car. And did I tell you this? At this place called Waterwitch, right? Did I tell you about this? That was crazy. It was so scary.
You did tell me this.
This is the scariest thing that's happened.
The person.
Yeah. And so we're in the car, and there's a guy behind the car who's, like, super skinny. It's hard to see his face. It's very dark. And he's, like, walking dead, like, staccato walking to us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not a regular body motion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like zigzag, and I look at my friend Whitney, and I'm like, "Are you seeing this?" And she's like, "Yeah." And he went around the front of the car, and he just like stared at us, and like hid himself in between some pillars, and I was terrified. And so we waited for him to finish, freaking us out. It's way funny, and. And she left. I had left my key in her passenger car, so I couldn't start my car. I got my car. She'd already bailed out. Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And
perfect timing.
And he noticed that, like, I was in my car and not starting the engine. Mm-hmm. So he started coming closer to me. I could see in my rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, and this is, like, such a wit move to do this.
Is there an aura coming off of him?
He just has like pale, he's is a African-American guy, but his skin was, like, green-gray.
Oh, so this is just a story about you being racist.
Yeah. So this is where I decided I'd... No.
No, but... Okay.
And so he...
He's looking very gaunt.
Yeah. It was a body type I'd never seen, but, like, skeletal.
Yeah.
And around that area, I was like, oh, this is kind of where, you know, some meth addicts are around here. So maybe it's just that. I'm not going to freak out. But it was really scary. And he kept approaching the car. And I was like, if I don't do something proactive, because I don't have the key. My car was unlocked, but I didn't have the key to start the ignition. So I just go, I'm just going to out-scare him.
I've had this impulse.
So I jumped out and I started screaming in tongues.
This is the same thing as you waving at the dark figure when you're a little kid.
Completely.
This is,
yeah. I'm going to out-scare you. Uh-huh. I got you.
Yeah.
And I was so confident that, like, I could do that. I could act myself out of this nightmare.
Uh-huh.
And I started approaching him and, like, barking and just screaming and doing weird motions. It was a hell of a performance.
Wow.
And he came closer. He came closer, and I was like, ah! Like, and then I was like a little girl scream. I was like, ee! I jumped in the car, locked the door, called my friend. I was like, hey, you got to come back. You have my key. I don't know why I did that. I didn't do that first.
I'm turning the music off. But yeah, keep going.
And so she like screeched back. He took off. But that's like, that was a real fucking thing. And I remember asking her, and I still ask her when we get together, I'm like, did that happen? She's like, yeah, absolutely, that happened.
You heard that episode that I did with John where I talked about that guy on the beach. That,
oh, yeah.
And it's that same thing. It's like you just get – I've been on this kick lately about us possibly – probably – I mean, again, you just talked about it, being open to different possibilities of the way the world works without being dogmatic about it and saying this is what it is, but just being open to the chessboard being bigger than what we see, which it undoubtedly is. The theory of us being kind of extra-dimensional beings that we are and we just don't always have access to it.
Yeah.
And things like DMT, like taking a DMT trip or adding psilocybin or any kind of psychedelic experience can kind of open up that extra-dimensionality where we're seeing auras come off of people really clearly and we're seeing intent come off of people really clearly. And the dream space is kind of this extra dimension that we have access to that we can astral project into the dream space, and it's a literal space that we go to that kind of exists outside of temporal time, and that's why people have deja vu where they're saying, I've been here in a dream, I know I have. There could be something to this too, and it's not just an evolutionary fight or flight mechanism, or it is, but the way that we've described the fight or flight mechanism might have something to do with our extra dimensional capabilities where we can see. And I sound so insane right now.
No, it's awesome. You know I love it.
But you know what I'm talking about?
You know it's the scariest thing that's happened. I don't even know why I didn't, like, I buried the lead. The thing is that the scariest thing that's happened to me most recently was not that zombie guy.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, and you know this, like, I, without getting on, like, a super soapbox about this, you know, I feel mushrooms has helped me with depression. It's helped me with anxiety. When I got into psychedelics way late in life.
Yeah.
And I'm that guy that won't shut up about it because I feel like they have real healing powers. My first trip was magical and kind of just so enlightening. And then I did some microdoses, and those were all good too. And then before I moved back, my friend was like, hey, I want to take you to this lodge and we'll have like a day as buddies, the spa. He's like, and I'll bring some mushrooms. I was like, cool, that sounds perfect. And because I was like, I had things in my life at that point, and most of them have been cleared out, not all of them, but I had like purpose stuff, failure stuff, relationship stuff, stuff with like my age, like being afraid of just getting older.
Yeah,
all of these really heavy things.
You're hitting everything on my list. I have a list here of I was gonna play a game with you at the end. Cool. We still might play it. I was gonna play scary or not scary with you.
Cool, let's do that.
But you're hitting so many things on the list.
But I mean, is it cool to share this story?
Of course, absolutely. So, but there's something about I'll let you keep going, but the psychedelic ego death that happens when you take you introduce a psychedelic,
totally,
and the ego death that goes away, and you're only left with the confrontation, yeah, of all that stuff.
Dude, Midsommar, yeah, is great because it is very accurate. Now, when I saw that movie first, I was like, all my trips had been like glorious and very, like I said, enlightening.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful,
beautiful,
funny,
silly,
laughing,
totally.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And
he really nails it visually. There's so many.
I had never had a bad trip.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, I was like, "This seems close, but I don't know what that is." And the universe really made me go, "Okay, you have all these other things."
Her bad trip when she's in the field and she runs to the outhouse and hides, yeah, and yeah, sees her dead sister
is spot on.
She is being confronted with the weight of the grief that she's going through in the middle of this trip. There's nowhere to hide from it. She's, yeah, trying to run away, but you can't run away because it's in you.
It's in
and
you.
Yeah, so
that was my experience, was that we went to this lodge. It was all good. I thought it was going to be really holistic, and the friend that I was with is a very safe person, and we did, and the problems, we were kind of biting off more than we could chew. So we had an edible, and then...
You were really confident at this,
yeah,
point.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, yeah, mushrooms ain't no thing. Yeah, that's my mistake, too. Ooh. And so then we're in the locker room. Trip. We take some mushrooms. We go out. Within 15 minutes, my buddy's in the jacuzzi, out, sunglasses, loving life.
Mm-hmm.
I am freaking the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, oh, no, no, mushrooms are my friend. Why? No. And I was really, like, bummed out. And it just kept replaying in my head. I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. So I got out, and I was like, I got to go on a walk. He got it. I walked around this beautiful lodge. I don't know for how long. And I had my phone with me.
It's so hard to keep track of how many minutes have gone by.
It's crazy.
You don't know if you've been there for 30 seconds or 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Yeah.
And I had my phone with me. My hand felt like it was three times the size it normally is. My phone felt like it was a fucking iPad. It also felt like it had thorns on it, like I was holding a phone made of rose.
I've experienced that. I pulled out a phone while tripping and been like, I want to text this person,
yeah,
back that texted me, but like I can't.
Well, and I wanted to text a particular person that I was, like, really, really struggling with relationship-wise.
Thank God your phone was stabbing you with
thorns. Yeah. Totally. It would have been the worst idea ever. Because mm-hmm. I know during the first trip, it was like, hey, put your fucking phone away, man. Because
mm-hmm.
that's, like, an atom bomb. That's a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I go around the lodge. I've told you a lot about this, right? I went around the lodge and... was trying to get my phone.
I think the scariest part you told me is when you went back to the lockers and you couldn't remember the combination.
That's what happened. Yeah, this part.
That's
so I go there and I'm like, I think it's this row. I think it's this locker. But here I am in I'm in a robe. I had my towel underneath it like Buddha style all the way up to my tits. And I was just like, I looked like Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
But I had my phone and I'm just... looking at this guy lurking. It's only us two in the locker room. So he's thinking like, does this guy want to take a picture of my dick? Really, that's what I...
That's what you're thinking he's thinking. You don't really know if that's what he's thinking.
It didn't look good.
But you just know...
It didn't look
this
good.
This guy's aware that something's off with
yeah.
me.
I was like, I look like I'm tripping.
He's currently
sure.
seeing your aura. And he's right? going, there's something not right with this
right?
guy. And or maybe he's not. But the paranoia can be ratched all the way, you know.
So I sit down in front of the locker... which I'm like 80% sure is my locker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it was a code, right?
See, this just stresses me out.
And
this part
I was
of the
like,
story.
I know what my code was.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what did I make my code? I thought it was 0666. Hey, Wit, you're a weirdo. And so I keep pressing that over and over and over, and it's going, So the guy behind me is going like, is this guy gonna kill me? Because he clearly, that's not his locker. He doesn't know the combo. He's just waiting, and he's going to make a sudden movement. I'm thinking all these things. I'm flipping
see, when
out.
You tell me the story, it could sound like, who cares? But I'm both the people in this story. I'm the guy that's watching this weird guy just punching the wrong thing over and over and kind of look over his shoulder at me like, what's up? Yeah. And I'm also you going, oh my God, I don't know. Like, so on mad. Drugs going, like, I just wish I could not be on drugs right now.
Yeah.
And I also, like, I'm just trying to get my clothes back, and I don't know if I'm ever going to get my clothes back, and I don't know if this is even the locker.
Oh, no, it got so much worse. So then yeah. I was like, I got to go find my friend, because my friend's got to remember the combo. Mm-hmm. This is my only way out of this hell. Put the phone in there, and then I can try to just deal. Because I have got 6 more hours, at least, in this state, and I'm mm-hmm. having no fun. I'm on a roller coaster at 3 years old going, like, I hate my parents right now. I want to kill them, because this is terrifying. Mm-hmm. That was the feeling.
Oh, yeah, remember when they would make you go on rides?
Yes! My mom loves Space Mountain. I'd be like, Mom, I don't know if you know this, but you gave birth to a total pussy.
Yeah, I was the same way.
Anyway, long story made anyway, way shorter, because yes. I don't want to take... Yeah. I was like, okay, I finally got out of the locker room, couldn't find my friend, didn't know how to get back, was super lost, just aimlessly being a weirdo. I'm sure if they had, like, cameras of it, that I looked insane. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do?
You're just pacing back totally. And forth with forever, a towel around your
forever,
waist.
Forever, and a robe. Yeah. I looked not right. And so I was like, oh, the steam room's going to be good. No. No, steam room was worse, man. I went to the steam room. I walked in a foot. All I saw, darkest steam room ever. Darkest. I saw feet. And I don't know if it was 3 pairs of feet or 300. And I sat down, and all I saw, the steam filled my lungs, didn't feel good, felt real weird. I saw beady red eyes, and I remember I stood up in that steam room, and I went, ah, fuck no. And I walked out of there, like ran out to the jacuzzi, found my friend, put the phone in, and then had some other stuff. Basically, the good part of that trip was that I sat down in front of a window, contemplated everything, and I got to go, hey, these are all my fears. And I remember feeling like, if I get out of this, this feels like the most, internal therapeutic experience of ever. And I thought, I don't know if I'm ever gonna not feel sad and scared right now. Mm-hmm. I was so scared. I was scared of living. I was scared of who I was. I was scared of the people that I had trusted, that I shouldn't have trusted some of these people mm-hmm. I was in a relationship with. I felt that person's presence was very black. And I kept asking my friend, like, is this person a bad person? It was freaking me out.
Yeah.
And
who knows how much of this is all specific truths being delivered to us. It could all be misconstrued and hampered by our own anxieties and our own fears about other things. But it is, yeah. But
there was a certain mm-hmm. point after I just, like, let it ride, and it was sort of like, have you ever broken a bone?
Yes.
And you, like, when you first break it, you're like, until I get this fixed, this is so excruciating, and is it going to end? And I remember just being like,
used to it.
Yeah, just, like, find a place to put the pain in a place that, like, you can breathe out the pain. I remember just doing a bunch of deep breathing, and all of these things that I was scared of, the thing that kept going in my head was, you're just going to have to go through it on your own, and that's okay. And that's one of my biggest fears, doing stuff on my own. And so I embraced that, broke down, and I felt such clarity after that afternoon, because I call that the procedural trip, because the other ones were fun. And that one, like, took a scalpel. And because I told myself, no, you're gonna survive this, and you're gonna have some answers. So, like, I mean, I may sound like a crazy person too, but
it's a hell of a story.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a story. And it really does. It's a succinct metaphor at the end of only way through it is through. And yeah. I mean, you mentioned Midsommar. That's another movie where I think audiences could watch it and go, they jumped out at me like twice. It wasn't even scary. It's like a 3-hour long movie.
I don't know who those people are.
But to me, now again, I don't know that I would describe it as a particularly scary movie, in that you and your friends should get together, pop some popcorn, watch Midsommar, and just laugh at how many times you're going to scream. It's not that.
No.
It's the fear of having to go through the hardest imaginable things by yourself and having to do it, you know.
And the people that you trust.
Uh-huh. And being betrayed by the people you trust, people leaving you alone.
That's the worst.
The people you love most being plagued by their own illnesses.
You know what I'm fearful of the most, Aust? Is when, and you know this, like, there's a lot, I want to communicate. Mm-hmm. And I want quick sorries. Even if I fucked up, I want that. And it is one of the hardest life lessons I have, is that, like, some people aren't like that, and that's okay. But I have always a tough time not being able to communicate with another person when I feel like there's stuff I could apologize for. And that, I mean, that's just a giant fear of mine, is that, like, people not being understood.
Well, and that goes back to what I was saying about with the spiritual renaissance of the fear of growth and fear of change and fear of learning. I think the reason why because I'm very much the same way. I want quick solutions and quick apologies, and I want to be able to explain myself when I've done someone wrong. I really want them to hear me, and I also want them to respond perfectly to my apology. Yeah. I want them to hear the exact meaning of my words and go, oh, if I had just known that, then I wouldn't have ever thought what I thought, and everything's better now. And what I'm learning is I have to learn to sit in discomfort.
Yep.
And I have to allow other people to have their own experience with
things. Their own process.
And their own process. And that is scary. It's a fear of lack of control. It's the same way of involving collaborators into our creative process. It's relinquishing control and letting people bring their experience and their stories into the fabric of what we're trying to create. Yeah. Hopefully everyone understands the hierarchical breakdown of we are trying to serve the vision of someone else in a creative process. But I think what you're talking about, for me, what I'm struggling with right now is sitting in my discomfort. And it's that, and because I want everything to always be okay. And so there's fear of discomfort and fear of being out of control, of this person's mad at me and I want to fix it and I can't fix it right now because they're not letting me. That person's having their own experience.
And you know what's really cool? And I think I learned this as a kid, is that, like, things that are trying and that are, maybe tragic, that pain that you sit with, that discomfort that you sit with, is an indicator that you're going to get to another place. If there was no pain and no discomfort, then you're still sidetracked. But the pain and the discomfort is like, oh, you're looking in the mirror right now. You're letting that sort of wash all over you.
Yeah.
And I now am like a weird junkie about it, where if something not fun happens, smallest thing, you lose your keys. I used to flip out about things like that, ruin my day. Now I just breathe it out, and I just go, like, it's going to happen.
It's going to continue.
I'm going to find it.
It's going to continue to happen.
If you know me. I mean, they don't call me Heartbreak Hertford for nothing.
We're going to continue to lose people we love. We're going to continue to be disappointed by people we love. We're going to continue to be the disappointer. We're going to continue to let people down. We're going to continue to let ourselves down. It's not... I don't think that we can be shooting for that changing. It's about finding a way to accept the discomfort of that. And you have things that happen, like a drug trip like that, like a bad drug trip. I heard this guy on Joe Rogan talking about a DMT trip that he took, and he hated it because he just said, it was no prep, and I just was launched into space, and I had no idea what the hell. He goes, I was out of space, out of time, out of identity, and he's freaking. He's just like, I hated it. And Joe goes, well, you didn't do enough. Honestly, you needed to take another couple hits because that's the initial launch. He goes, yeah, the launch is rough, but if you can hang on and ride it out, these light orb beings will come and take you. And he goes, yeah, it's weird. It's a wacky thing to have your whole entire reality flipped inside out like that. But there's a lot to be gained on the other side of the discomfort. Yeah. And I've noticed this when I have panic attacks, and there's so much chaos going on in my head, I know from experience now that if I can, as calmly as possible, get through it and just not try to fight it and not try to push it away, but allow myself to push through it, there's a reward on the other side of that. You saw me at that breath work thing we went and did.
Absolutely.
And I had a full-on confrontation with fear.
Yeah.
And I was freaking out because we were kind of inducing panic attacks through this breath work exercise. And I was so afraid that I wasn't going to be okay. I was afraid that I was going to maybe hyperventilate and have to go to the hospital. I was afraid I would embarrass myself in front of these other people, that I would maybe throw up because I'd get nauseous, or I was freaking out. And the constant refrain that I kept having, this ego death was happening, and the id or my higher self or whatever it is, my extra dimensional self, was saying, it's okay that you're afraid right now.
Totally.
It's okay that you're afraid. It's all right.
I'm never talking about like not... Like, the acceptance is definitely key.
But that was something I had I'd always been trying to conquer my fear.
Sure.
And
I'm not scared.
And I don't think that that's the route.
No.
I don't think that it's about conquering it. So I was in prepping this. I was like, can I even ask the question, what do we do about fear? I don't think there is such thing as overcoming it or living without it. I think it's about...
coping and being aware.
And also, like... coexisting with it, like sitting in it sometimes,
yeah,
and allowing it,
because it's actually good for you.
Yeah,
like I get always tripped out when parents go, oh, or you know, people that I talk to, and they say, oh, when we grew up, we couldn't watch this certain stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we couldn't watch these sort of things. They were too scary. My parents wouldn't let me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, hey, Sleeping Beauty's fucking scary. That cartoon.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
Maleficent is scary.
You kidding me?
When you're a kid. And, you know, Disney didn't do everything right. But, like, the thing is that you have to go through those growing pains of facing your fears. And the biggest fears are moving, new job, relationships, whether it's a marriage or divorce, you know, breaking up or breaking in. Those are all really scary. And they're supposed to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
If they're great, then they may not have like the enriching foundation that it needs to have. And that's what I've realized is like relationships for me, I always want candy. I always want it to feel like a pixie stick and just like, yes.
Yeah.
And that's not it, man. Like a good relationship is gonna feel like a salad that you like some days, and then other days you're just like, you know, I'm working through it.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
Yep. This is a day that I'm just getting through. This is a day or a string of days that I'm getting through. There's a lot of fear. I'm worried about the future. I'm worried about my place with this person, or I'm worried about my place with this job, or I'm worried about my place in this city or in this career.
Well, you know what is really, like, people get really scared, especially, well, I don't know if men go through this more or women. I don't know, but... you know, talking about abandonment and fear, it's like when you're dating somebody and I heard you talk about this a little bit on one of the other episodes, you constantly are going, I'm scared this person's just going to leave. They're going to decide to bail.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much fear in that. I think everybody experiences that at least once, if not many times.
Kind of a sociopath if you don't, I feel like.
Totally.
How could you not?
The cool thing is to really start to embrace autonomy and that, like, people can change every day. If you wake up one day and it's sort of inexplicable why you're not uber duber in love with this other person, you can't be bent out of shape about it. You have to be able to just like release yourself and say, that's okay. I'm not inside their skin. I don't understand them. I don't understand what's going on, but I'll try to understand what I need to understand. And everything else, I'm just going to kind of breathe out. That's a huge concept.
And all this stuff is so much easier said than done. Just like so much.
It's, I know. Like, do we sound like fucking like assholes that we're just,
no,
like,
but I mean,
this is how the world works.
That's literally what I'm going to, like, the only thing I'm going to be doing on this show is saying, like, here's what I intend to be doing. But of course,
do you know what I still get scared of, man?
What?
I still get a little bit of stage fright. I mean, people might think that I don't, but
every
I
time.
Still get it.
Every time.
And you gotta have it.
Every single time.
I had one of my favorite acting teachers say, if you're not scared on that opening night in every performance, yo, you did it wrong.
How many times will I be outside of an audition room shitting my pants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Trying to calm down and just go in and just do it like I've done it a million times. How is there an amount of times that I can do it to where that doesn't happen? And I've talked to so many actors who are like, I just don't know. And maybe it is just about accepting that that's going to happen and it's okay.
Yeah.
And it's just part of the process and I still got it. And like, and usually that's usually how I get through it is I just go, yo, I'm nervous because I really care about what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I really care about, making sure that I do a good job, whether or not I get hired. I would love to get hired, but whether or not I get hired, I want to make sure that I do a good job. And that's all okay. That just means that I care.
Totally.
And setting the goal as I need to be completely calm and completely worryless, I think is a little bit unrealistic and sets me up to be more nervous because I'm sitting here going, I'm not in the state of mind I need to be in. I'm freaking out. Well, I'm freaking out.
The whole gig, man, is that to do it right, you have to be the most vulnerable and transparent you can be. And you're being somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit foreign.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much work you do, you shouldn't just go out there and be only you. You're having to kind of like take on this mask. And it should be scary to be that vulnerable and that transparent. That's why love is scary, because you should be transparent and vulnerable.
Yep.
You know, I don't know where I saw this. It could be just like a shitty meme. But like, it makes the most sense to me to go, love is about going, I'm meeting somebody and they know every way that they could destroy me and trusting them that they won't. And that's love. Have you heard that before? That's a goodie, huh?
Yeah. And just like stirs up so much, little scary butterflies in my stomach. It's so scary. Okay, we have a few minutes left. I want to do just like a lightning round of like questions. We're going to go. You can take a little bit of time, but like we're going to just try to rattle them off.
Jam through it.
Okay. First one is probably the longest one.
Okay.
It's two-parter. Do you need to first be afraid in order to be truly courageous, or is courage the absence of fear?
The first.
You're right. Okay. Yes, you got it right. I agree. I don't think that courageous people lack fear. I think that they...
they're just better at it.
They act despite fear. And if anything, you know, they maybe are more companions with their fear, like we've been talking about. They just accept that it's natural to be afraid. You should be afraid when you're going in for a mission to kill a leader of a terrorist cell and or whatever, you know.
For sure.
And you should have that feeling in your gut and you know, and then act anyway. But hopefully it's not so bad that it debilitates you from acting.
Right.
So like you said, yeah, they're just better at it. Now we're going to go scary or not scary. Really quick, lightning round. Spiders.
Not scary.
So scary.
No, just an animal.
Dogs, like mean ones. They're nippy.
I got to take a sec.
Yeah.
I used to be really scared of dogs when I was a kid because I was little. And so they always overwhelmed me and thought I was like a toy, a plush toy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to really make a conscious effort. Like, really, not even until my 20s, where I'm like, hey, they just want to play. And so now they're not scared of me anymore. Like, when I lived in Britain, every 9 out of 10 dogs are pit bulls in England.
Yeah.
I was really surprised about that. And they're never on leashes. And they're the most docile dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being in that experience, too, really helped me go like, hey, relax, weirdo.
I love dogs so much. And I had a couple years where I had a bad relationship with them because I got bit by a couple little dogs.
Yeah,
and
then
I was kind of wearing this fear aura outwardly that they were picking up on for a few years. And I had to really try to calm myself down when I would pass dogs on the street because they could sense my fear.
Of course.
And they'd act up. But it was on me as a response to what had happened. Right now, me and dogs are doing really well. We're really getting along. Creepers, like the guy that was there at Water Witch.
Scary as fuck.
So scary.
Scary as fuck.
Yeah. Sharks.
Scary. Definitely scary.
So scary.
Unpredictable.
They don't mean to be. Like,
no.
They're totally innocent, but so scary.
So scary.
So scary. The ocean.
So scary.
Scariest thing.
I love it. It's very peaceful, but I've also been tumble dried before, and you hit your head, and I was alone.
It will kill you.
Yeah.
It does not care.
Yeah.
You can't go further than 20 feet.
Don't get cocky about the ocean.
Don't go for... Don't do not... People scuba diving, I don't think I'll ever go.
What are you doing?
What are you doing down there? Who do you think
you
are?
What are you doing?
You're not supposed to be down there.
You don't like breathing?
Why do you think that you should, why do you think you should be down there?
It's like, hey, we got two things we can count on. My oxygen supply and my eyeballs. I'm going to choose to X out one of them.
Okay, yeah, I don't go down there. I won't. It's okay. I don't need to. Other people.
Sorry.
Other not happy. People have, and I've watched their videos, and it's cool. Natural disasters.
Scary. So scary.
World doesn't care.
Yeah,
it just shakes
it's
us
bigger
up.
Than you. Be
I will
humble.
Say, I don't spend a lot of time being afraid of these things happening.
No, it's it'll kill
of,
you. You
it's
gotta
kind
relax.
Of one of those things where I just go, I'm like, there's nothing I can do.
Nothing.
And I put it in the category of like, although this one does scare me more for some reason, I put it in the category of like asteroids hurtling through space that might hit the planet and kill everyone.
Yeah.
But that one for some reason scares me more. I don't know why. It's almost like the elimination of all life is scarier to me than just like a coast being destroyed by a tsunami.
That's why you just gotta, and you this know? Sounds like a total dickhole thing to say, but that's why every day you gotta just be like, you know what, if I could, I remember I said this to somebody I was dating once and I was like, I'm trying to make every day as happy and as magic as possible because I got no idea if I'm here tomorrow. And yeah. They were like, why would you think that? And I was like,
why do you not?
Because I'm prepped.
Yeah. Hey,
I'm prepped, baby.
Because, like, ever known someone who died?
Because they ever, didn't know.
Ever known someone who didn't? okay, so disease.
Oh, so scary. So maybe scary. The most scary.
Yeah. Because that's the one where it's like, at least with natural disaster or asteroid, it just lights out. But if it's, oh, you have terminal cancer and it's 6 months to...
And hey, I don't know if I'm going to be the guy that's going to be peaceful on that jazz. Yeah. If that happens, I'm mad.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, I don't give a shit about the new iPhone. I'm dying.
First things first, I'm relapsing.
Yeah.
First things first, I'm going out and getting litty. Like, I'm going to be like, I'm doing all the drugs.
Put it in my eyeball.
Yeah, let's go. there's that. God.
Fuck you, man. Not scared.
Yeah.
I think I took the microchip out, and whether that's a good
is
move or a bad
God
move.
Feared?
No, holy shit, I got it. You don't even know this. What? I was in the Trader Joe's parking lot 2 weeks ago. I'm such an asshole. Oh, God, why am I publicly saying this? And I have a skeleton, like a glow-in-the-dark skeleton hanging from my rearview mirror.
Yeah, a little skelly.
Because I'm kitschy.
Uh-huh.
And a spook.
Uh-huh.
And I was coming up the driveway, and there was this little Latina lady. And she saw the skeleton, and she started yelling at me. And she was like, you need to believe in Jesus. You need to believe in Jesus.
I'm scareder of them.
And I looked at her, and I went, but maybe he's not real. And she looked at me. She started crossing herself. I mean, this really happened. And I don't know
how
nutso she was, but it was so out of nowhere and felt like a scene out of a movie where somebody just goes like, beware of da-da-da-da-da. And I...
Marsha Gay Harden in The Mist.
Completely. Yeah. I had never experienced that before. Yes, those people scare me.
I'm scareder of them. I'm scareder of the fanatics.
Same.
And the
same.
Hare Krishnas.
You're not helping.
Yeah, so scary. The devil.
I mean, my theory is that we can be the devil.
Yeah, that's...
Bring your own
I
pain.
I was so
bring
afraid.
Your own pain.
I was so afraid of the devil growing up. I was so scared.
Of course.
When I came to... atheist theory that I had, and that I still kind of maintain, is if there is a God, and he has, like, a plan for morality on Earth, he has to be complicit in the plan of the devil, like, in cahoots with the devil.
Good
because
move, yeah.
He can't just be, like, allowing the devil to just run amok on Earth. And if he is allowing that to happen, he's allowing it. And if he's not allowing it, if the devil has more power than him and they sort of have equal powers and they're battling each other, truly battling each other for dominion over the Earth, that's also, like, well, then you're not God. Then, like, there are two legitimate options. Because if you are God and you're all-powerful, then you can stop – you should be stopping the devil.
This is going to really fuck up my, like, future as a minister.
Mm-hmm.
But, yo, there's just too many holes in that Swiss cheese.
Of course, yeah.
So, like, hey.
Of course. And also, like, I think when I saw the movie The Conjuring, it was, like, about an atheist being possessed by the devil, and it was, like, you're the most susceptible people, and it really got to me. I was, like, uh-oh. And then I thought, oh, wait, in real life, an atheist never has been possessed by the devil. Only people who believe in the devil have been possessed by the devil, so.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Aware.
So I just went, oh, cool, so if I just don't buy that, it won't happen. Wow, fixed.
That's good. That's good. Awesome.
Ghosts.
Intrigued. Is that? Can I say that?
Yeah, me too.
Super intrigued. Because if you got something and you're on another side, tell me.
And I've never thought of them as particularly malicious. I've never thought of an extra-dimensional being opening a drawer in my room.
If, like, they're locked, tortured energies, which is probably the most likely thing, mm-hmm. energy forms, because I believe in that, that are in a limbo, they're like stuck somehow. They got something to say. And I think you should just be aware of that and, like, sit down and listen.
Yeah, not scary.
Listen to your ghost, baby.
Yeah, interesting. I like that.
Interesting.
Aliens.
I want them.
Yeah.
I want them.
I want it so bad.
So bad.
I want to go out there and just see it in the sky. And I don't care if they not going to work today because I'm just going to go talk to the aliens.
You can anal probe me. It's fine.
Bring it on.
That's because that's what people are scared about the most. Like, I don't like aliens because I don't want that anal probe.
Bring it on.
Whatever.
Just tell me about it too. Like, don't like sneak attack. Like, you don't need to sneak attack me. Like, just let me know. Yeah. Why be rude about it?
Don't,
like,
be rude.
I'll help you out.
I'll probably consent.
I'll shit in a cup for you. ISIS.
So scary, because that's brains.
But that's also
brains are scary.
Yeah, and that's
ideas
also just
are
like,
scary.
Yeah, that's also not, just religious extremism. I should say in general.
I'm like, not scared of Trump. Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm scared of what Trump fucking what fires he builds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's ISIS.
That he's like, hey, I got the lighter fluid, and I'm gonna by saying some dumb shit.
Remember when he said that Hillary Clinton is the founder of ISIS?
Dude, he
said that.
I know. He plays lunatic Mad Libs every day. It's the best.
That's wild. Billie Eilish.
Oh, you, dude, you have, like, you're a big fan.
I'm really on a kick.
Yeah.
I really am.
Why would I be scared of the world?
Well, Mary's so scared of her. Or Mary likes her now. But initially she was like, she scares me.
Oh, no, I like intensity. Yeah. Be more intense.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's cool. Yeah.
And guess what? Get bigger pants.
Well, the other...
Your pants are too small.
Get bigger pants. Wear more necklaces.
Dude, I bet she's, like, in a way, she's sort of like a real Weird Al Yankovic character.
She's actually 32.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's doing this
whole... She's just fucking around, man.
I think part of what scares me about her is that it makes me feel really out of touch.
Oh, yeah, we're old as hell, bro.
It makes me feel like, what are they doing now? What are the youths?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'll say things, and I'll be like, yeah, dude, that's the vibe. And I'm like, can I say that?
Yeah, which is the next one.
Because I've also got a bald spot.
Mm-hmm. Can I say that's the vibe? Which is the next one? Aging.
I mean, it's a different kind of scary. It's a different kind of scary because I think the way out of that scary is, I guess we talked about it before, is being cool with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to get out of that age scary, is to be cool with yourself. If you're not...
It's
in love with yourself and not in a dickhole way, but where you go like, hey, all the catchphrases. I take care of myself. I'm learning. You do this really well. This is why your podcast is fantastic, dude, is because you're the most self-aware person I know.
Oh, how dare you?
No, it's true, no. Aust. It's true. You're the most self-aware person, and you're always fixing yourself, so you always feel safe, because I never feel like you feel like you're the shit. You never feel like you're the shit.
Well, that I definitely don't feel that. So,
but you are. There's a lot of things that you're exceptional at, and, like, that's the way out of... Like, we're both going to be the dopest old dudes.
Yeah.
When they did that old guy app, I was like, be that now. I want to be that now. Because I looked great. I was like, oh.
I got excited up to a certain point. I was like, ooh, I like 63-year-old me. The next aging, the next 40 years, when I was like, I did it three times. I filtered it three times. And by the last one, I was like, oh, I don't like it.
You know what? Well, here's the thing. It was kind of fucked up. Because every female that did it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Because it just made you look not great.
Yeah.
But all the dudes were like dignified and like the back of their novel where they're like, hello, a little about the author.
Well, that says more about us and our weird beauty standards than it does about anything else. Dying.
Yeah. Scary as hell.
Yeah. I don't.
That's a whole can of worms.
I really feel like I made peace with that being like suicidal for 10 years. I don't want to die anymore. I'm happy that I'm not suicidal anymore. But when I was, I kind of was like, it's cool if this train
You know
when
I face
me,
that the most?
You know?
I face that the most on an airplane. Because when I was when I was younger, I would be like, turbulence, yikes. And so I would like do a little self-prayer.
Bye, Mary. I love you.
Bye, Mary.
Bye,
you're very
you
wonderful.
Guys. Have a great year. Sounds good. Love you.
She has no idea that I'm breaking up with her later today for...
Because
of her
freaking
dings going off in the other room.
Hey, Mary, we got to talk about the dings when you get back.
It's fine. Just we'll talk when you get home.
So this thing that just happened, this ding that you just got because of this thing, it's about that thing.
She comes home and all her stuff is packed up. Not her stuff, not mine.
Lunatic. No, but I would say a little prayer on the plane because I didn't want to die that way. I was going to miss everybody. Now I get on that plane and I just go like, hey, you know what? I've had a good run. And that's a cool place to be.
I've had that thought many, many times on a plane where... So I have terrible plane sickness. And Mary's seen this where I... And then I have panic attacks when I start getting sick. So it all compounds on top of each other.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of the plane crashing. I'm really not. I'm scared of throwing up. I'm scared of like getting sick and like not being able to regain my balance. Because I've had this happen before. But I'm not scared of the plane crashing. I really am not.
That's just it. Yeah. Is that because you don't want to lose your own self-control?
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah, I don't want to just like. I just don't want to be sick. I just
Dude, some people hate vomiting.
Losing a loved one.
I mean, whatever.
Scariest thing, I think.
Yeah. Well,
are you saying no? I mean, you've been through enough of that, but the thing that scared me most about Hereditary and Midsommar was the grief sequences of losing the most important thing in the world. Just the scariest thing.
No, that's like in the game of Operation when you like get the spot that goes, eh, that's my spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have experienced it and I know what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed my whole, you know, course of life. Still, it's Hamlet's ghost. Still, like, sort of around. I could go to therapy for the rest of my life, and I'm still going to have things that are going to trigger losing my dad.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a fear of getting over that. You don't ever want to not care there's so many people who describe grief in this way where they're like, the day that I don't care anymore, that my mom's dead, I don't want that day to come. I don't want, you know what I mean?
What's really weird is that I don't have any grandparents anymore, and I haven't had grandparents for, I think the last one passed away. I almost said croaked. That's how weird I am.
I mean, no, but
like 15 years ago.
I can go, and I hope this doesn't hurt my parents' feelings, but I can go weeks or months without thinking about my grandparents. I'm sure that they think about them every single day. It will come up from time to time. I'll see a photo of my mom's mom, and I'll go, oh. And it'll stop me, and I'll go, oh, that woman cared
for
me a lot.
Well, I'm at that age now where I'm like, I got my mom for maybe 20 more years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's good odds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've tried to prep myself emotionally, like, that's just the natural order of things. It happens. But because she raised us, because it's been, like, the core four of me and my two little sisters and her, like, to not have that anymore seems like an existence that I don't understand. So that's a biggie. That's a scary one.
Self-love and accepting love from others.
What am I terrible at?
Are you scared? Is the question, what am I terrible at?
Yes, I am. Yeah, dude.
That was the other thing at that breathwork workshop. I had never considered that I'm afraid to love myself. I have always struggled with loving myself. I didn't realize that I might be truly... There's a lot of embarrassment around it, and
I've just given. I came to this epiphany, no joke, 3 weeks ago. Mm. I've given a disproportionate amount of importance my whole life to, not my whole life, but like in the last 20 years since I've been an adult,
mm-hmm.
I've given a disproportionate amount of importance and priority to romantic love and totally shelved self-love, platonic love, brotherly love. Like, that's, again, not to, like, you know, make it feel like I'm doing this on purpose. I'm not. It's, you know, that's one of your strengths, my friend, is that you make brotherly love cool. You make... You bastard. And that's why, you know, you became family in the quickest amount of time, is because you make... And it's evident. You can hear these episodes, and I vouch for it because I've experienced it. Like, you make that just as important as your relationship with Mary, as your relationship with your family. I don't know how you do that, but, like, you... That's so cool, Austin. And that, you know, I think that that's a good way to combat loneliness, which, if you do the backwards maths, is fear, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, that's... It's love, man.
Well, you're really good at it, too, and I love you very much.
Love you, too.
Last one. Mm. How afraid of you... How afraid are you of the Clippers losing the Western Conference playoffs to the Lakers this year?
So much, because it's like... Because they, like...
They finally got it. They finally got... Can you imagine if LeBron and AD beat...
Dude, it's so easy for everyone to be like, well, Clippers curse. It's like... That's such an easy thing that, like, fuck you. Fuck you for real. Because there's so many people that have worked really hard to get it to where it's just like, the first time it's respectable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm like, scared. And that's also, you become like Larry David when you're a Clippers fan. We're like, everything that could go wrong is gonna go wrong. Whatever. Oh, is Kawhi gonna get, like, decapitated in a freak accident? Sure.
And let's say it is. Clippers in the Western Conference playoff finals.
Yeah.
Is the worst team they could lose to the Lakers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I don't hate the Lakers.
Yeah.
But Laker fans are like, they're so, because I've lived here my whole life and because I love the Shaq and Van Exel era,
mm-hmm.
I'll geek out right now.
Yeah.
But like, Laker fans have such entitlement where they're like, we were bad for 2 games and the world ended. It was like, try 30 years. Try a racist owner. You know?
Yeah.
Like, get out of here. Be humble, man.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the other thing. I'm not into sports as much as I used to be, but it's hilarious that you brought that up. Because it made me unhealthy. Yeah. It made me, like, have hate for things that, like, I'm never going to meet these people.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like... Why am I carrying around? I used to fight with my brother-in-law all the time because he's a Lakers fan, and we would have the dumbest fucking arguments all the time over sports.
Yeah, I get unhealthily mad about
it's you. Stupid.
It's really dumb.
Well, and then I mean, it's just a waste of time. And so, like, I love it. I would love if those Clippies, like, got a little taste of stuff, because it's like, why not, man? There's enough pie for everybody to eat.
It probably will.
But, like, if they don't, then. Fuck it, I'll still be a fan.
Speaking of pie, you want to go get some lunch?
Yes, for sure.
All right, I love you.
Love you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, just got back from lunch with Wit, and Mary's still not home. And I was sitting down to record this outro, and this noise started coming from our bedroom, like a tap, tap. Tap, not like a knock, but like someone was tapping with their fingernails on the wall or something, you know, trying to let me know that it was there. And I know I probably sound crazy right now, but I'm feeling a little scared because I have that weird feeling like I'm being watched, you know? And it... Yeah, did you hear that? That was it. That's not like... It's not like a bird caught in my chimney or something. That's...
I have a gun!
Okay, yeah. I guess if this is how I go, then this is how I go. So I'm gonna go... check out that noise, And tune in next week when my guest will be Juliana Devar, and we'll be talking about dreams, unless, of course, I've been pulled into a portal to hell by a poltergeist, in which case, just listen to something else. Wish me luck.
Mary?
Hey.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness.
What's up?
Oh, you just scared the shit out of me.
Oh, sorry. What are you doing?
I was recording, and there was a noise coming from our bedroom. It was like a tapping noise coming from our bed. I know, you're looking at me like I'm crazy, but it was...
Austin, there's nothing in there. Come on, let's go.
Don't go in there. Don't go in. I would... I'm getting a knife from the kitchen first.
No, just... Austin, there's nothing in there. Come on, let's go.
You weren't here. You...
See? There's nothing in there. You're just getting spooked.
Okay.
Is written, edited, produced, and hosted by Austin Archer, with original music also by Austin Archer. You can find more music and other projects by going to austin-archer.com or by looking up Austin Archer on Apple Music or Spotify. I am Barbas, the demon of fear. Be sure to rate and subscribe, and to leave a live goat outside of your house as an offering to protect you from my glorious wrath.